Looks like we're at about half volume of persons that will be coming through the weekend. Everything can be accomplished in a short period of time if we're really focused. But generally we're not so focused. And when we're focused, to extend that over some period of time, it's very nice. I've taken part in japa retreats that are shorter and some that are longer. And I'm hoping this one, because it's a full retreat, as we've been doing here, devotees will be able to go very deeply in this atmosphere, in the association, the number of days we're dedicating to this. The topic this morning is a combination of two topics, alignment and taste, two headings. And as far as alignment is concerned, aligning our practice, sadhana, with our goal of that practice, sadhya. We'll speak on that a bit and we'll go to the other one. The other alignment is over on that board over there, that alignment chart. So, little refresher from yesterday evening on, we were using the word gap between what we know and what we're doing, or what our goal is and what we're experiencing at present. So alignment is to bring the two together. And when there's alignment of what we're doing and why we're doing it, we begin to approach the goal. And when you feel yourself approaching the goal, however that gap is being filled or the movement is being made, it's encouraging. You feel enthused, inspired. Let me go further, let me go further. Except, quite often, usually, we get distracted and kind of, one of the devotees speaks with this terminology, bungee cords. You know what a bungee cord is? Those things that have hooks on the end and there's elastic and you wrap something around it. And as soon as you remove the hook, it goes right back to where it was. It doesn't stay. So when our effort to close that gap, to bring our sadhana to the focus upon the goal of our sadhana, goes back to complacency, business as usual, and not at all the same kind of satisfaction of approaching Krishna. So there's a very nice verse that Rupa Goswami writes in Bhaktivinoda Sindhu that's right on this topic, sadhana and sadhya, that's quoted in Nectar of Instruction. So I'm going to quote that verse and then read a little bit from Nectar of Instruction, text number 8. You can refer to that later if you wish. Seva sadhaka rupena siddha rupena chatrahi tad bhava lipsuna karya raja lokanu sarataha. It's actually a very elevated verse. Both Rupa Goswami, Nectar of Instruction, Rupa Goswami, Nectar of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion. So the Vraja Lokanu Sarata is in the transcendental realm of Vraja, Vraja Dham, one should serve the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna with a feeling similar to that of his associates. And one should place himself under the direct guidance of a particular associate of Krishna and should follow in his footsteps. So that's up there. But seva sadhaka rupena, this method is applicable both in the stage of sadhana. This is Prabhupada's translation. Spiritual practices executed while in the stage of bondage. That's familiar. Spiritual practices executed while in the stage of bondage. The sadhana or sadhya. And in the stage of sadhya or God realization. When one is a siddha purush, or a spiritually perfected soul, applicable in both. So while performing sadhana, we should align ourselves with sadhya, the goal. Make this comment particularly for the benefit of the residents of Gita Nagari and Govinda Das, who resides in Vrindavan. What's a replica of Vrindavan? There's no replica of Vrindavan. Vrindavan is a transcendental abode of Krishna's appearance and pastimes. It's unique. At the same time, Srila Prabhupada described in the Articles of Incorporation for ISKCON, he established seven principles, and one of those principles is establishing places of pastimes of Krishna. Now, how do you do that? Krishna has to come and do some pastimes. And then that's established. Krishna establishes his place of pastimes. But it's one of the purposes of ISKCON to do that. So how do you do that? You invite Krishna. Please come and perform some pastimes. Appear and perform pastimes with your devotees. So he came. Radha Damodar. And Radha Damodar are looking, or the other way around, Bhakti Tirtha Swami Samadhi is looking directly at Radha Damodar. And those of you who are residents of Gita Nagari know that he established his samadhi here in Gita Nagari deliberately to make a statement that this is one of the places of Krishna's pastimes. It's sacred. Why is it sacred? The Srimad Bhagavatam describes that such personalities as Vidura, spoken by Yudhisthira, because they carry Krishna within their heart, wherever they go, they establish that as the place of pastime of Krishna. It's as good as a place of pilgrimage. And Radha Damodar, they're wonderful pastimes in the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Radha and Krishna is one entity, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu going here and there and establishing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. It's very, very sublime, very deep, and very wonderful, especially those who are intimately worshipping Radha Damodar and can appreciate some of their glories. But the place is none different, so here we are. And in a holy dham. And we're not in the sadhya state, the siddha rupena or siddha purush stage, but we're in the sadhana stage. So here's Prabhupada chooses to quote Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and his commentary on this verse from Nectar Devotion or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Quote, "One who has not yet developed interest in Krishna consciousness," and by that it doesn't mean like, you know, come to the Sunday feast, it means take a deep interest in Krishna consciousness, attaining Krishna consciousness. "One who has not yet developed interest in Krishna consciousness should give up material motives." That's like, it's not just referring to the people that come to the Sunday feast. It's an instruction that is applicable to those who are in the practicing state, the sadhana stage. Give up material motives and train his mind by following the progressive regulative principles, namely chanting and remembering Krishna and his name, form, quality, and pastimes, and so forth. And it accelerates quickly. In this way, after developing a taste for such things, one should try to live in Vrindavan and pass his time constantly remembering Krishna's name, fame, pastimes, and qualities under the direction and protection of an expert devotee. This is the sum and substance of all instruction regarding the cultivation of devotional service. It's like a nut with a nice shell on it. Just have to crack the shell to get that nut. But give up all material desires and train the mind. It's sadhana, it's not an event. It's a practice, it's a cultivation, it's not an event. And one should move in that direction, recognizing or being attracted to, drawn to the goal. I'm going to go further in the purport. We're still reading directly in Nectar of Instruction, text number 8. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes, quote, "Chaitanya Charitamrita advises those who are neophytes are to give up all kinds of motivated desires and simply engage in the regulative devotional service of the Lord according to the directions of Scripture. In this way, a neophyte can gradually develop attachment for Krishna, Krishna's name, fame, form, qualities, and so forth." Then he goes very quickly, just following what Nectar Devotion is. It goes from Vidhi Sadhana Bhakti to Raga Nuga Sadhana Bhakti to Bhava Bhakti to Prema Bhakti. He takes one through those stages. That's not where we are, but there we should be knowing what the goal is, this alignment topic. We should do our sadhana. That's to close the gap. We should know where we are, but we should also know where we want to go. And we're taking the means to get there, and we're contemplating on getting there. Just like, you know, we all traveled from some place to come to Gita Nagari. So we didn't just get in our car and start driving. You know, we knew what the goal was, get to Gita Nagari. So in one of the stages that develop further along the path of reaching our goal, there's, I'll read. In the neophyte stage, one should always engage in hearing Krishna Katha. This is called Shravana Dasha, the stage of hearing. By constantly hearing the transcendental holy name of Krishna and hearing his transcendental form, qualities, and pastimes, one can attain the stage of acceptance called Varana Dasha. And it goes further, ecstasy and so forth. So for us, knowing the goal, but we also need to know where the next step goes. We're here to, in a concentrated way, engage in hearing and chanting. And where does the next step go to get to prema bhakti, to get to the goal, to the stage of there's nothing going on in our consciousness except that one thing, absorption in Krishna. So acceptance. And acceptance is two-way, just like relationship is two-way. There's our acceptance of our relationship with Krishna, or sambandha, establishing our relationship with Krishna. In one sense, how can we establish something that's already there? We have an eternal relationship with Krishna. That's what we know. But where we are is, we're not attentive to that relationship with Krishna. There's this gap, what we know and what our consciousness is at present. So a consciousness closed the gap, and I'm detailing some of the points from yesterday in this morning's class. I'll go to some other ones also. Close that gap is acceptance, specifically acceptance of our relationship with Krishna. The medium for doing that is what we're doing, hearing and chanting, shravanam kirtanam, sadhana. But so that sadhana, so that there's some taste, some feeling, some what we want, love that's awakening in our heart, this wish to establish, restore our relationship with Krishna, then some acceptance. And we wish that Krishna will accept us. Alignment with that relationship. So we know, this is one of the things we know, we know that Krishna is forever inviting a fallen conditioned soul. This, as I expressed yesterday, our unending invitation from Krishna to come and rejoin him in the spiritual world. Krishna is forever, Bhaktisiddhanta's language. The transcendental autocrat is forever inviting the fallen conditioned soul to come and enjoy with him in the spiritual realm. However, that same conditioned soul is apt to indulge in those very same things which are to be left behind. And that's the gap. So, acceptance, varana dasha, while we're engaged in sustained hearing and chanting, it's an opening of the heart. We know that Krishna wants us. I mean, we know that, but we're not acting in that consciousness. So the way to act in that consciousness is the other way around, the acceptance of that invitation. Krishna, please accept me. Meaning, I'm unqualified. This is the humility of a Vaishnava, but also the honesty of a Vaishnava. I'm unqualified. What reason would Krishna have to accept me? I can think of lots of reasons that Krishna would have no reason to accept me. And we can each look within ourselves and find nothing but disqualification. No reason at all. Krishna should stay away from such a person as myself. But I want to restore this relationship. And so, my request is, Krishna, please accept me. And when doing our sadhana, our chanting of the holy name, if one calls like that, Krishna, please accept me. In one lecture, Prabhupada described, it's the common way of the meaning of Hare Krishna is, please engage me in your service. But he also expressed, Krishna, please accept me. Just like making an offering in devotion. Whatever offering we have to offer Krishna, what's its value to Krishna? Nothing. Whatever it is that we may offer, Krishna can produce unlimited of those effortlessly. He doesn't need anything. Like the nice lila of Indra becoming envious of the austerities of Naranarayan Rishi, thinking, oh, they're doing all these austerities so they can take over my Indraloka post. Naranarayan may be ambitious. Atmavan manyate jagat. Because he's like that, he's thinking others are like that. Even the Supreme Lord, his worshipable master, is ambitious to take my post. So he thought, let me break his vows of determination for austerities. I'll send Cupid with the most beautiful damsels of heaven to go fire an arrow and enter into the heart of Naranarayan, and he'll see these beautiful damsels and he'll become attracted and he'll fall, breaking his determination. So Kandarpa came and he was ready to fire his arrow, but when he saw Naranarayan, he was just to be in his presence, he was so humbled. He dropped his bow and dropped his arrow and profusely apologized for this terrible mission that he was sent on by Indra. It was his fault. And with Nara behind, Narayan smiled very gently and sweetly, and effortlessly he manifested unlimited goddesses of fortune. Each one being millions of times more beautiful and attractive than any combination of the damsels of heaven. How could Narayan become attracted by anything of which he is the source of everything? And even just a dim reflection of that spiritual variegatedness. There's no attraction from his position. At the same time, when something is offered with real devotion, Krishna is attracted. He's attracted by that genuine, sincere desire to please him. And so now we'll go back to this, the sadhana stage, where at best there's a mix in our hearts of desire for Krishna and desire for objects of this world. And we know where we want to go, but there's a big gap. So this acceptance, aligning the sadhana with where we want to go, and Krishna. But so if Krishna is very kind, although there's no reason for Krishna to be kind upon a person like me, but just because he's kind, not for a good reason, just by his kindness, by his causeless kindness, please accept me and engage in sadhana genuinely, sincerely from the heart. This is alignment, or moving closer to alignment. Now I want to connect that which I just discussed with this chart over here. Some of you have seen this chart before. This is Satchinandan Swami's chart, reproduced in a different way. To receive the holy name, there's body, mind, heart, and then Krishna's internal realm. There's some feedback in this thing. So I want to go to Bhakti Vinod Thakur's description of the Shikshastakam verses, where in Bhajan Rahasya, Bhakti Vinod Thakur describes that the eight verses of Lord Chaitanya, which is the essence of all of his teachings, which is the essence of all the Vedas, it's a sadhana in itself. It's by meditation, while chanting, meditation upon Shikshastakam, it carries one to Krishna. The holy name is Krishna, but there's this gap between our conscious experience and Krishna, and a relationship with Krishna. So he described that Shikshastakam verse 1 is an effort of cleansing, purification, because without being pure, how can we come in the presence of Krishna? The answer is we can't. So we want to make the heart pure to invite Krishna, just like the Gundicha Marjana pastime, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the devotees cleansing the Gundicha temple because Jagannath is going to go from the temple to Vrindavan or Gundicha. And so they cleanse the temple, so it's inviting for Lord Jagannath to come. And after cleansing the temple, they cleanse it again, although it's already clean. So that it's immaculately clean. Bhaktisiddhanta describes it's cleansing the heart. It signifies preparing the heart to receive Krishna. So if we're going to say to Krishna, please accept me, well, we have to mean it. And to mean it, there's something that we do, that we make the heart clean, so that Krishna will want to come. Krishna, please accept me as enter in the form of chanting your holy name. Please enter within the chamber of my heart, as your, in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's language, you're dancing on my tongue. Now please enter within my heart. But not thus the heart is pure. So in this first verse, this establishing of the relationship, re-establishing relationship with Krishna, sambandha, our relationship with Krishna through his holy name, the verse begins, Chaita Darpana Marjanam. And it ends with Sarvatma Snapanam. So what do those terms mean? Chaita Darpana Marjanam. It means, the translation that Prabhupada has given us is cleansing the mirror of the mind. Or heart sometimes. And Sarvatma Snapanam, the soul. Atma Snapanam. Snapanam means like what we did before coming to Mangalarti. Took a bath. Cleansing. Cleansing of the soul. Similar, yes, but in these, the Gopuram chart here, there's this alignment of mind and then heart. So what does this term mean? From the heart. We have this, I've been asked this, so I'm going to spend some time responding to the question. What does it mean to do something from the heart? What does that mean? How do you do something from the heart as opposed to just do something with your body, but it's not from the heart? Or even the mind. That's, the mind can be instructed to go somewhere, and sometimes it can go there. There's a nice verse in the first canto, chapter 6, text number 15. It's Vyas instructing, Narada instructing Vyas about the position of bhakti. Because Vyas has compiled the Vedas but has not sufficiently glorified Krishna. So he explains that the yoga process is competent to eradicate kama and lobha, which is very nice. But it's not capable of bringing real satisfaction to the soul. Because only when there's real satisfaction on the platform of the soul is one really protected. And if you're not protected, you're not safe. And if you're not safe, it's a precarious situation. Yeah. Shamyati is the word. Complete satisfaction of the soul because of having taken shelter. Just the soul. I'm going to stay on the topic of what does it mean to act from the heart, but I'm going to go over here for a moment and indicate this alignment exercise we did yesterday. It wasn't just like a time filler. It's to help us really focus, on the topic of alignment. What is our intention? What's the sadhya? What's our goal? So just like I want to appreciate how succinct Krishna Smarana's sankalpa was to chant without fear. But how can you chant without fear? It's possible, not like you put a decal in the back of your car that says, no fear. You've seen those? I'm American, macho, no fear. It's a bluff. The real position of no fear is where there's complete shelter, where there's complete protection. Just like Prahlad. He was fearless. He was not afraid of this terrible personality, Hiranyakashipu. I mean, besides the fact that he was his father was such a creature that when Prahlad started speaking things he didn't like, he was ready to kill him. And he even tried, but he still remained fearless. I mean, fearless. Because there was complete shelter. Complete shelter. No other shelter. No other shelter. That's where there's, but the gap is where we have other shelters. The happiness derived from material objects. There isn't any happiness derived from material objects, but there's this long-standing hope that we can get some happiness from material objects, and we keep taking shelter, and it's a fearful position, because at any moment those things can be taken away, and in fact they will be taken away, and we know it, but we still hold on. And therefore, back to what Bhaktisiddhanta was advising, in the stage where there's not even interest in Krishna consciousness, in the deeper sense, one is advised to give up material desires. That false shelter of finding happiness in bringing the senses to sense object, when in fact that's the cause of suffering. Yehi samsparshaja bhoga dukha yonaya evate. Let go of that false shelter and take exclusive shelter in Krishna. How can one do that if one doesn't have faith? Maybe Krishna will let me down. I mean, you know, so many people have let me down. So maybe Krishna will let me down. Maybe I'll step and he'll giggle and he'll move aside and he won't be there. Oh, I can't place my trust in Krishna, so I'm hedging. I learned this term from a devotee who was taking a degree in finance. You don't just place your investments in one place, you place them in many places, because when things go up and down, then you can remain, you know, in good, safe positions, hedging. Or it's a gambling term, I was told. You don't just put everything in one place. Don't put all your eggs in one basket, as they say. You put, you know, in a number of baskets, hedging your bets. But with Krishna, it's exclusive. It's exclusive shelter. And when there's exclusive shelter, then there's safety. Or shamyati. And shamyati is only possible. This yenatma supraseditya, the same phrase earlier in the Bhagavatam, in the first canto, there's complete satisfaction. And when there's complete satisfaction, nothing can deviate you. Nothing can deviate you. Without naming names, I'll just describe a couple of conversations with recent conversations with some teenagers. And I can remember very well what teenage life was like, and it's, you know, it's something, it's one reason I don't want to take birth again. A strong motivator. Because teenage life is very turbulent. And we, you know, without even knowing, without having a compass, like, where am I? What's going on? Where am I going? So there's this major thing that these individuals I was speaking with, between gap between who they know they are and the expectations of others to be what they want them to be other than who they are. And then, you know, wanting acceptance from those persons who want them to be something other than what they are, and being in a split world. So how to find that who you really are place? And it's not just teenagers. So that the necessity of training, Sureshwar Prabhu was appreciating briefly this morning, the value of training. You know, it's easy to become a member of the Hare Krishna movement and even get initiated. Look, you just, you know, wear these clothes, say these words, get up at a certain time in the morning and you're initiated. Our goal. But then, you know, there's this major thing called, you know, anarjana vritti. And, you know, that requires a lot of care and guidance and, you know, to get to who you really are. Not who you aren't. We joined in the same place in Boston, right? Around the same, was it the same year? Same summer?
Summer of 70.
Summer of 70.
You came first because I remember you were doing some swimming with the press. You were doing some proofreading.
Yeah. So, from when I was a very spanking new bhakta at the Boston Temple, there was baby bhakta. There was this devotee, I won't mention his name, and he was a grihastha, and I saw this particular devotee, he's good, because he just did everything so well. I mean, spiritually, materially, it looked like, you know, he had his act together. And then within 3 weeks to a month, he was gone. And I realized I don't have the qualification to understand who is advanced, who is not advanced. Because it's not just the external things, there's something else. Because he had, you know, he had his act together. He ran the press. He was in charge of a lot of people, did a lot of stuff, and competent guy. And he was gone. Then the second thing I realized was this process of devotional service works. It's cleansing. And you better watch out, because as stuff cleanses, if you're attached to some of the stuff that's getting cleansed, you'll go out the door with that stuff, because bhakti is cleansing. And part of the turbulent period of devotional service is this stuff is being, you know, Hari is taking away. And I'm attached. I want that stuff. I want it. I don't, you know, there's a gap between. So that this acceptance is Krishna's shelter in the place of fearlessness. And there isn't another place of fearlessness. There is not. Not by bluffing, by being a macho, or by even being a great yogi, or a jnani, or a tapasvi. It's by Krishna's shelter. There isn't an alternative. And sadhana is placing our faith where our mouth is. Placing our heart where our, what, you know, where Krishna's shelter is. What happens is the mind will then also begin a little bit to cooperate. It will help align the mind with the heart. This is on the alignment topic. But then, where's the heart? Well, the alignment is with the holy name. Now, notice in the chart, there's this red box in the middle that shows Radha Madhava in Mayapur, the deity Radha and Krishna, that is the holy name. And you see that where that key is? It's on the inside. You can't break your way through that door. The key has to be used from the other side and the door opened. That's this Krishna, please accept it. The alignment of the heart. So what's the heart? It's not just feeling, because, you know, one can have a feeling about all kinds of things. One can have lusty feelings. One can have greedy feelings. One can even have sincerely mistaken feelings about something. So when we speak about this person is very much from the heart, that the scriptural definition or the absolute platform of what it really means to be from the heart is where there's no other shelter but Krishna, then that's the position of purity. Now, so to get that purity, we know from the last verse of chapter 3 of Canto 1, how that purity can take place is when there's purity of thought, and there's only possible purity of thought when there's purity of action, and purity of action is only possible when there's purity of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So there's that alignment. So what goes on in the physical plane must be in alignment with the mental, which is in alignment with the heart, a very sincere desire that connects with the holy name. And that's where our sankalpa comes. It will help us focus. I really like that example of the magnifying glass, because the energy of the sun, it's now nice, bright morning sun, and according to the weather forecast, it's supposed to be mostly clear skies, except on Sunday. And, you know, beautiful weather. So there's this nice, beautiful sunlight, but it's not burning, because it's not focused, and sankalpa will help us focus this our intention upon accepting, as we're hearing and chanting, accepting, saying yes from the heart, and asking Krishna to accept us. I didn't get to the other topic, and we ran out of time. So this is the back to the seva sadhana rupena siddha rupena chatrahi tad bhava lipsuna karya vraja lokanu saratha. This is Rupa Goswami's instructions. We're at the sadhana stage just by mercy. We're not at the siddha rupena, with a sadhana rupena. But that which is appropriate for both is we should cultivate, or in our language this morning, align where we want to go. We'd like Krishna and our relationship with Krishna to become deeper, become more vibrant, more palpable on the experiential level in the course of our time spent together, in the course of our chanting of Krishna's holy name. Partly I chose to speak the way that I'm expressing today because of how pleadingly Prema Tarangini was speaking yesterday about take this, become very serious and desirous of making this sankalpa very meaningful for you for the weekend. I just was thinking that resonated very much. I wanted to support that by speaking this way. It's like having the magnifying glass, and if you're just frivolous, it's never going to make fire. You can see that it does bring the light to a more concentrated place, but you really have to stay very attentive to keep it right on a small point, and then the little sliver of smoke starts to come, and then it's fire. So let us try to stay focused on aligning. Chant from the heart. We'll speak some more at some point in time on what, how to do that, or the topic of chanting with taste. I'm sure it'll fit in. Any comments or discussion? Yes.
Maharaj, I'm about to drive to the Jersey Shore to be with relatives for Labor Day weekend. I won't be as lucky as you folks here. Focus. Forget the technology.
Technology has its advantages and its disadvantages.
So maybe you can tell me how to stay focused while I'm in the relative world.
That, no pun intended, huh?
Pun intended.
Pun intended, okay. Remember Prahlad Maharaj. But the principle of Prahlad Maharaj was remembrance. He achieves perfection through remembrance. So when trying circumstance presented itself, there was remembrance. This is not the same trying experience, although there may be some other trying experiences, like, I don't know, trying to be, you know, a fixed devotee when God knows and I know privately that I'm not such a fixed devotee, or something like that. So trying circumstance in the effort of pure devotion, and then trying circumstance because the environment is the opposite of conducive. But in any circumstance, I get strength from remembering Prahlad Maharaj. Compared to what Prahlad Maharaj had to endure, what I have to endure is peanuts. And so let me remember and become inspired by Prahlad to always remember Krishna. So that means, you know, make your devotion more internal in that circumstance. And you're, you know, from the heart, you're praying, Krishna, kindly give me the opportunity and the intelligence and wisdom how to present myself because they know that you're a devotee, so they'll be judging Krishna consciousness based upon whatever you do and don't do, however you walk and talk. They're judging Krishna by, let me be your representative of nice merit, and that's the core remembrance. And if you so desire some opportunity, because somebody may ask something, please give me the intelligence how to present it in a way that they won't be like overwhelmed, but will be appreciative. Some opportunity to serve you favorably. And stay in constant remembrance of Krishna in that mood of service. As Prahlad, you know, when Sunda and Amarka were there, he didn't get up and do the same thing he did when they left. But when they left, he was fearless. He spoke to the students who never heard any of that stuff before. And he just spoke as he heard from Narada. That's what he told them later. I've only been speaking what I heard from Narada.
When I phrased the question, I said, I'm not as fortunate as you folks. But actually, your answer is nice because it's an opportunity. Actually, it's a fortune to go internal.
And to one of the things that I wanted to do that I didn't do for this morning's class was to explain the connection between sadhana and sadhya. You can take what you're going to be doing as a sadhana. Here's a chance to practice Krishna consciousness in a circumstance that's challenging or unfavorable. It's not Hiranyakashipu, but it's unfavorable. How to do that? How to stay fixed in Krishna consciousness? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had a, you know, step above yours by going into the assembly of Prakashananda Saraswati. And also, I'll take the opportunity to share this. When Prakashananda Saraswati had been openly criticizing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Mahaprabhu didn't respond, was undisturbing to him, because he was, you know, following his own teachings, Amanina Manadena, Kirtaniya Sadahati. But his followers, they were disturbed. Please do something. So, knowingly, he did something. And by his own divine arrangement, one brahmana came and invited him. I'd like to feed the sannyasis. So I've invited all the sannyasis to come to my place. I'd personally come to your home. You please come too. So he said yes. But otherwise it was no. But he said yes. So he went to the place. And we know the pastime, but nice to hear it again. And they were already there. Thousands. Prakashananda Saraswati was like the head honcho. He had thousands. Forget the number of thousands. 7,000. Thousands of sannyasis at his feet. He was a big guy. And when Mahaprabhu came, he washed his feet and sat down in the place where everybody washes their feet. Which, and everybody knows that's dirty. Why do you sit in that dirty place? Come sit with us. No, I'm not qualified to sit with all of you. You're so elevated. But just being in his, of course, his Brahmajyoti was pretty awesome. But it was also his presence, his purity. By his purity, their hearts moved. Even hard-hearted Prakashananda Saraswati. So he spoke with Mahaprabhu. You're a great scholar. Before you came to Benares, before you took sannyas, you were renowned. Nimai Pandit. You defeated Digvijay Pandit. You're like a Maha Pandit. You're such a learned person. And now you're a sannyasi. Why are you not studying Vedanta Sutra and chanting Om like the rest of us? Instead, you're going here and there with, you know, worldly people and singing and dancing, and sannyasis don't do those things. You know, it's like singing, why are you going to the disco? In our contemporary version. Why are you doing that? You're a sannyasi. And Mahaprabhu said, my spiritual master told me I'm a fool. And I accepted his words. I'm a fool. You don't have the qualification to study Vedanta Sutra. The subtext is, Mahaprabhu was telling them, you don't have the qualification to study Vedanta Sutra. But instead of saying you don't, he said I don't. Don't have the qualification, my spiritual master said. You're a fool. You don't have the qualification. You should just chant Hare Krishna. So now, the purport that I wanted to read. Adi Leela, chapter 7. I hope. Text 96. Text 94. Adi Leela, chapter 7. Here we go. Prabhupada Prabhupada writes, a person, this is alignment, a person who cannot keep his faith in the words of his spiritual master but acts independently never receives the authority to chant the holy name of the Lord. It is said in the Vedas, Yasya Devi Para Bhaktir Yata Devi Tata Guru Tasyaite Katitar Yarta Prakashante Mahatmana. Only unto those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master are all the imports of the Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. This Vedic injunction is very important, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu supported it by his personal behavior, believing in the words of the spiritual master and so forth. So Prabhupada is emphasizing in the purport the operative principle that Mahaprabhu is expressing is his implicit faith, the instructions of the spiritual master. And because of that implicit faith, he attained something that he didn't even understand. He just had faith in the instruction, like Gopal Kumar in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, just had faith in the instruction. And because of that, he was protected through all kinds of circumstances, and he achieved spiritual perfection because he had implicit faith. So that's what carries us through trying circumstances and carries us to the goal of Krishna consciousness, to the sadhya. But if that implicit faith is weak or tentative, I'll have faith provided X, Y, Z, then that's not shelter. And one who does not have shelter is in a fearful condition, whether you're in the temple room in Gita Nagari or in a challenging situation at the Jersey Shore. Because one can think, I'm okay, everything's okay. And the next thing you know, slam. Because it can happen, and it does happen. Just like this example that I expressed as a new devotee. This like pillar all of a sudden disappeared. The house didn't fall because the pillar disappeared, but the person disappeared. So one needs that faith, that shelter. And Krishna gives that access. Access to his lotus feet through the agency of... So go there as a missionary on behalf of Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Anything else? I my arm isn't long enough to reach. I'm sorry. I'm not sure I understood the heart section of this class. Are we talking about physical heart? No. Mind being the second stage, which is subtle, and the higher level goes back to gross heart? No. What does it mean, aligned heart? Okay. It's a condition. It's in between, Krishna and the mind. It's more like the soul, but it's like consciousness. What's our consciousness? Prabhupada has described that consciousness and the soul are concomitant factors. Nice. So like sun and sunlight, they're concomitant factors. We cannot say that the sunlight is the sun. We cannot say that consciousness is the soul. But wherever there's a soul, there's consciousness. And wherever there's consciousness, there's a soul present. So heart is where, what our true intention is. It's very close to sankalpa. It's like, sankalpa means what our intention is. It's where is our consciousness going? Sincerely means there's no mix. What I shared with this one of the teenagers I was speaking with was, there's this terminology that describes marble that you make deities with where there's no lines in it. White marble, black marble, marble that has no lines in it. That's like finest quality marble. And then there's other marble that has lines in it, and then there's different colors, this kind of marble, that kind of marble, they have names for it, and so on. But where there's no lines in it, that's very special. So, from the heart means there's no lines in it, or sincere. It's like the intention of the soul that's unmixed. Quite often there's mix, and where that mix comes in is, the mixer is the mind. This desire, that desire, put it in a blender and comes out, you know, mixed. Smoothie. But from the heart means it's without a mix. It's the desire of the soul is radiating out like consciousness radiates out, and there's one objective. It's like, you know, a very deep position from the heart, a deep caring, a deep concern, genuine, unfaltering, not created by circumstance, not destroyed by circumstance, genuine devotion. That's what from the heart means. It's not the muscle. It's not the physical thing. The thing that pumps and blood throughout the body. It's the seat of consciousness. Or consciousness itself. Very sincerely felt and expressed through words and actions. That's what from the heart means. Not circumstantial. Anything else? Over here.
Guru Maharaj, I'm not so sure what my question is, but I'm trying to. You're speaking something I'm realizing over the past few months is that I'm holding on to the shelter of image issues and all this coming from the mind. And I want to let go of it. And I want to feel secure in relationship with my Krishna. So,
you came to the right place. Our medicine is the holy name. And say it positively first. The degree to which genuine shelter in the holy name can be taken will determine, or will be a measure of, how much you can let go of that other shelter. There has to be a desire to let go of that other shelter. But knowing that there's like an attachment for this other shelter, therefore this the appropriateness of Krishna, please accept me. You know, that it's not that Krishna becomes our janitor, but the purity of Krishna will eliminate that other shelter. That's what sadhana is. So it's the aspiration for the real shelter that reduces the false shelter. A willingness to get rid of it must be there. But the willingness to get rid of it is not going to get rid of it. It's mercy, effort and mercy. You've heard this before. So, effort and mercy. And strong effort and strong call for mercy. And when the tendency, this other tendency, inflates or expands to the a reflex. First it's practice, but a reflex can be call out. Just in one of the Sharanagati Japa retreat on our 64 round day, there was one. It was a very intense experience and an intense group of chanters. And one of the Matajis periodically would, while chanting, with her bead bag still on her hand, close her eyes and raise her hands like this and chant. So when we did our sharing at the end, I asked what that was. She said, when my mind would go to just, you know, to a false shelter, my mind would get distracted from the holy name. I was reaching out to Krishna and the Krishna's holy name and calling upon him. Please lift me from this position. It's effort, but it's depending on mercy. You know, I would guess that at a certain point it didn't even have to think about it. It was just, you know. Calling upon Krishna. Consciously, not like, you know, mindlessly. That's what from the heart means, is with all sincerity. And the cleansing effect comes on Krishna's time and in Krishna's terms, but it comes. Okay?
Usually, like even if I'm trying to let go of dirty things and I feel some taste for devotional service, there is this danger of picking up the same dirt again, you know, when I made a conscious choice to leave it at one instant of time. They just keep on going on that way.
This is where it's similar question, you know, the phrasing of it is different, but it's a similar question. Stay fixed. That's what from the heart means. Even it, you know, it's beckoning, please pick me up again. And even, you know, you pick it up again and you put it down again. You know, it's like a child that's not trained, but is being trained how to, you know, behave nicely. From whatever and wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, just keep bringing the mind back. And bring the mind back. And however many times, it doesn't matter however many times, bring the mind back to Krishna. By effort, showing Krishna, this is what I really want. This other is a tendency that's not what I, you know, it's that gap again, or the split between who I really am and this persona that's just a false persona. It's not who, it's the modes of nature acting, attracting me to some false sense of happiness, of involvement with matter, even subtle matter. Like idea or conception of self or subtle matter. And there's happiness there. And there's this strong tendency. So you a simple phrase, it's nice to reduce things to simplicity. By practice something regularly, it becomes second nature. So that's the effort side. But then, what do you put in that place? You put Krishna's shelter. Without Krishna's shelter, it's another flickering phantasmagoria. It will never become established. Never, 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 never. but when there's real shelter. Going back to our, you know, alignment. What is it that I, what is the intention? The sankalpa. And when chanting, and when, you know, living my life as a Vaishnava who is deriving the nourishment from my relationship with Krishna through associating with Krishna's holy name. That's my life. And the other is not me. And I abandoned that false shelter and take real shelter. Become second nature. It actually is our real nature. And the other is artificial. But with faith, continue cultivating like that. So we're on schedule. It's 9:30. The 9:30 bell is ringing. It's time for breakfast. Shri Shri Radha Damodar Ki Jai.
Yeah.